Hi, I'm Malcolm Nichols.
And I'm Richard Ayling.
And this is Man Reimagined, a podcast where we, as men, attempt to reimagine ourselves in the 21st century.
How can we respond to the big questions that we're facing, both within ourselves and within society, and make sense of this ever-changing world?
We don't have all the answers, but we do want to create a conversation. So join us moving forward as a man reimagined.
Hi everyone, welcome to what is for me one of the most enjoyable interviews that we have had the pleasure of doing, and today it is with Mike Dyson. I'm going to briefly introduce you to his work before Malcolm and I actually dive into the interview itself. We prefer to kind of just read out someone's bio so they don't have to explain or introduce themselves in that awkward way that sometimes happens on podcasts and interviews. So here we go. Since 2015, Mike Dyson has led tens of thousands of conversations with boys and men all over Australia on manhood, mental health, mateship, risk, violence, and respect for women. These conversations give him a rare insight into what's truly going on behind the mask of masculinity and a unique perspective on how our culture of masculinity shapes our men and boys' well-being and behavior. Mike is the lead facilitator of goodblokes.co, both in camps and retreats. In the education sphere, he trains teachers to design and facilitate their own programs to engage boys in meaningful reflection and conversation. His corporate presentations inspire leaders to carry the conversation on healthy masculinity forward in the workplace. Mike is a dedicated husband of 22 years, a proud father of two amazing teenage daughters, and a lover of the great outdoors. Mike loves nothing more than yarning about manhood and masculinity, .. I can truly say that that's exactly what happens in this podcast. He's one of the most engaging, warm, passionate humans we've had on the podcast so far. And without further ado, I bring you Mike Dyson.
Hey, welcome everyone to another edition of the Man Reimagined podcast. Today, it's me, myself, Richard Ayling, my very good friend, Malcolm Nichols over in New Zealand. Say hello, Mal.
G'day, Rich. How you doing, mate?
Pretty good, my friend. I'm going to ignore you and me today, and we're going to dive straight in because we've got a super special guest, someone that we're both really pumped to talk about. And that's not just, you know, what you say because they're actually already listening. It's genuinely the case. Let's dive straight in. We've got Mike Dyson here, who's based right now in Perth in Australia, group facilitator of men's work and so much more. Mike, welcome. Thank you for taking the time. How are you doing?
Yeah, good, Rich. G'day, Mal. Thanks for having us, guys. And great to be on your podcast and stoked to be having a chat with you.
We're definitely stoked to have you here too, mate.
Right. And just that energy that comes across, just there's this openness that I love and I've experienced in pretty much every single Instagram post and reel that you've kind of put out there. There's such a positive, for me, like open energy and fucking grounded as well. You know, there's not some kind of preachy vibe. You're not saying this is how it is. There's just like, let's do this. And it's, I love the good blokes thing as well. Maybe I can just quickly ask you about that. Like, what a great name. What inspired that?
Yeah, it's I don't know. I don't know if there's a clear answer to that, but I really just wanted to focus on the best of ourselves as men and get men to start having conversations around how we support each other and what is the best version of mateship look like and what is the best version of supporting and encouraging women look like and what is the best version of self-care look like for men. And you know, it's about getting blokes to have deeper conversations around their well-being, deeper conversations around their relationships and all of that stuff. And you know, I could have called it a lot of long, lofty, conscious, aware, spiritual names, but I just wanted it to appeal to the everyman, and I kind of want to redefine what it means to be a good bloke. We talk about good blokes, you know, in Australia here, we talk about mateship and being a good bloke a lot, but I think we can aim a bit higher and focus on the real positive with that. So, hence the name, Good Blokes Co.
Beautiful. I mean, you're a man after my own heart in the sense of just keeping it real and grounded. There's lots of other language out there. And again, it's not to say you're right or wrong, but you know, who I am and clearly who you are is just going to resonate when we're being real and using that kind of language for ourselves, because the everyman, I love that idea, rather than, and I'm putting my own words in here, like aspiring to be something else. It's much more kind of, it sounds more collaborative and supportive. That's kind of how I'm experiencing it. Is that how you'd interpret it as well?
Yeah, collaborative and supportive and honest and real. The key thing with healthy sort of masculinities for me, it's about, rather than trying to ascribe to anyone else's idea of being a tough guy and being strong and being dependable or vulnerable or whatever, it's about being my own best version of myself. It's the core of it's about authenticity and honesty and that you know, collaborative thing you mentioned as well, I think is something we can really get better at as men, that tendency to want to do things by ourselves and be sort of independent. And I think we benefit the more we lean on our mates, the more we check in on our mates, the more we trust and rely on our mates and women in our lives as well, to be more collaborative, I think is a learning point for a lot of blokes.
Beautiful. Mal, you had your hand up. You wanted to jump in with a question.
Well, it was a curiosity more than anything, because I mean, blokes is obviously a pretty, you're an Aussie, I'm a Kiwi, And I wonder how that translates. What's your experience been in translating that across other nationalities and borders? And you know, for America, for example, are they confused by what a bloke is, for example?
Yeah, I mean, most of my work is in Australia. My camps and retreats are, all in Australia so far, primarily in Western Australia. So I am speaking to a local audience, and New Zealanders and Aussies will be familiar with that term. But I think I think Americans kind of get it as well. I think they understand what that vibe's all about, and certainly people in the UK and other English-speaking parts, from what the feedback that I get, I think they understand what we're you know, hitting at with that idea of being a good bloke, and that aspirational idea of, you know, transforming, you know, our current ideas around what a good bloke is, and starting to think what's 2.0, what's the next kind of version of really, you know, supporting each other and having each other's backs and getting around each other, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, beautiful. Yeah, I love that. So good.
So, Mike, let's kind of dive back a little bit. You know, I just would love to hear a bit about you know, your background and a bit about your story, like before you even decided to get into this kind of thing. Like, what did growing up look like for you, like as a boy, and especially in kind of Western Australia, and how did that shape your experience that led you into this path?
Growing up for me was, you know, if I think about what childhood was like for me, it was about sport and it was about success. My dad was a tennis coach, and I grew up in a footy mad part of the world in WA. And I spent every spare moment with my brother, who's less than 2 years older than me. We're pretty close in age, and every spare moment we're either hitting tennis balls or shooting basketball out the front or kicking a footy around. All of those kind of things. And there was a real emphasis on achievement and success. And I really saw my dad as a hardworking man who put a lot of hours into his work to be the breadwinner. And he was really sort of aspirational and constantly trying to sort of, you know, scratch his way up the ladder and get to a, you know, slightly nicer house and a slightly newer car. And that was, as a kid, I think my version of what manhood was about. You needed to be able to kick a footy a long way. You needed to be, you know, be able to shoot threes and slam dunk and earn money and be the breadwinner and to be successful. And you know, nothing in that is inherently bad. There's nothing wrong with being able to sort of play football or basketball or to earn a living or to provide for the family. But I certainly don't think I saw a real diversity of what's possible for men. I didn't see softness and gentleness and caringness and these sorts of things in my world as well. So I think when the pressure came on me as a, you know, becoming a father was a really stressful experience, and wanting to be this soft, tender vulnerable, gentle person with my babies, but also be the breadwinner and work a million hours a week. And I was studying at uni all at the same time. And yeah, I really felt that pressure as a man to sort of reinvent what I'd learnt. And a lot of men that sort of come across Good Blokes Co are in that similar sort of stage of their life as well. I think hitting parenthood, we naturally start to sort of question what it is to be a man and what we've assumed about manhood that may or may not be working for us. Yeah.
Fascinating. So if I'm understanding you right, the kind of the moment, let's say, when you thought, okay, like I really want to do something differently here, I'm not starting to question what's going on, was when you became a father. It was around that time. And did you say that you became a father around the time that you were going off to university? Was that around a similar time? Wow. Yeah, how old were you?
It's so 25. I went back to uni and had we had our first my eldest daughter was born around the same time, and so I'm working, I'm studying, I'm a parent, I'm supporting my wife who had mental health struggles at the time, and life was pretty hectic, and it was a big moment of reimagining for me, but I wish it was a bigger moment, because the biggest moment happened, you know, probably 10 years down the track. When, you know, I nearly lost my best mate to suicide, and there was a year or two of trying to negotiate conversations with him. Like I really wanted to talk to him about it. I didn't know how to support him. He didn't know how to talk to me about it. And then a year after that, I found myself in the hospital emergency department on a bed thinking that I was dying. And then the doctor explains to me, oh, you're actually not having a heart attack. This is anxiety. So that was the turning point moment for me, that after 10 years of working and providing and paying the mortgage and trying to get everything right, it all came crumbling down for me. And I started to realize, hang on a sec, I'm pretty happy to have conversations about my well-being. Why have I not been actually doing it? Why have I not been talking to my mates about, oh, geez, I'm really stressed at the moment, and oh, I've got a bit too much on my plate at the moment, and I'm juggling a lot. I was really happy to have those conversations after the fact, but I just was not making the effort to actually have those conversations before I hit crisis point. So that's a big motivator for me getting into this work, is to try and get blokes to be more proactive, to check in on each other before the train wreck, if you know what I mean.
100%. You know, I mean, you know, I've got my own tale, which I've shared about, you know, having an autoimmune disease that kicked in after I was incredibly stressed. There's a lot of pressure on me. There was a lot of depression, a lot of anger. And, you know, I was just bottling it up. You know, I wasn't talking about it. And I got that wonderful wake up call from my body. Right. So it, how often have we heard that? It seems to be like the body gives us a really clear sign. And then we're like, oh, okay, I guess I need to do something about it. But you're saying, well, like, I got that too, and I'm trying to prevent other men from, you know, getting that far and actually checking in on each other. Like, are you willing to share a bit more about like what that anxiety and that stress and that pressure like felt like? Because 10 years of doing all of that, I mean, you know, supporting your wife that had mental health problems at the time, new kid, job and studying, like, these are enough for any human, right? So like, was there, and this is a curiosity for me, was there that added sort of pressure of like, well, I'm the man, therefore I need to be able to do all of this and I shouldn't be asking for support? Was that playing a role at all, or were those factors on their own kind of enough?
Oh, I think the role of the, you know, modern father was absolutely a big part of it, and just proactively getting support was just not something I ever even considered. So it wasn't that I had these obstacles that meant I didn't want to ask for help because I was weak. It was just that I never considered that asking for help was a thing that I could even do, which was just crazy. So yeah, I can remember being on this hospital bed, and I had this tightness in my chest and dizziness and nausea and all this stuff coming over me, which is why I didn't think it was anxiety at the time. I thought, clearly there's something seriously wrong. I need to go see the doctor. And the doctor said, if the pain persists, go to the emergency department. Sure enough, it got worse. And I rushed into the hospital, and I literally thought I was dying. And after finding out there was nothing wrong with my heart, it was only then I really started to go, oh, what's actually going on? And then I started to realize how overwhelmed I had actually been particularly for the prior sort of 18 months before that, after moving house, getting a new mortgage, choosing not to take holidays, you know, my best mate struggling with thoughts of suicide and all that stuff going on, and me just trying to keep it together and to keep, you know, physically fit and to keep paying the mortgage and to keep my business going and to keep the food on the table and to get the kids at school and all of that kind of stuff. And it just came crashing down on me physically and mentally and emotionally and spiritually.
Hey, Mike, I mean, there was a phrase that you used just before, which jumped out at me, and it was, you used the term modern dad. And I'm curious about this, you know, because as a dad myself, you know, I often catch myself, and I've heard this expressed a number of times, that it's kind of like there's extra pressure on the modern dad, because the modern dad also wants to be an exceptional father, not just a breadwinner and everything else. I mean, it sounds like, I mean, how was your relationship with that? Was that also going on for you on top of all of these things that you were doing? Was that a big driver too?
Yeah, I think unconsciously it was. I think I just took all those messages on. Like, I want to be the breadwinner and I want to provide for my family and I want to live in a nice home, which means I've got to work hard. And also I wanted to do different things differently to how my father had, which meant I wanted to be present with my kids. I wanted to change the nappies. I wanted to pick the kids up from school and walk them home from school and take them to the park and take them to gym class. And you know, I kind of just put those pressures upon myself to be all of those traditional stoic masculine, you know, 1950s dad things, as well as the modern dad things of changing the nappy and doing all of the things. Yeah. And it's interesting to me. You look back to the 50s and there was one parent working and one parent parenting. And now we've got both parents working and both parents parenting. And I feel like rather than, we should just be each working 15 hours a week. Why are both people in that classic nuclear family thing? It seems like both partners are working 40 hours. Both partners are hugely stressed out. So, yeah, I don't think we've quite got the balance right of what that should look like. I think women are incredibly overworked and overstressed, and I think men are incredibly overworked and overstressed. And I probably don't doubt that gender non-binary folks are overworked and overstressed as well. But in parenting, for me, that modern parenting struggle is about balancing those traditional roles with that, you know, new school ideas of being vulnerable as men and being present as men. And yeah, I think there's, you know, that's a lot on the plate of the modern man. I think we have to just be a bit gentle with ourselves, which is a learning experience, certainly for me.
Yeah, thanks for that last little bit. I think that being gentle with ourselves is a great piece. Rich?
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to jump in or segue into kind of the work that you do now, but understand what happened after. You know, like, how did you start to, when you realized, okay, that was anxiety, something needs to shift here. You know, did you just give your kid to your wife and head off into the bush as you... like, you know, how did you deal with it?
Yeah, well, heading into the bush was part of it, but
okay. You know,
I think I
I said, excellent.
I didn't, like I said, I didn't have any objective, any sort of obstacles to talking about it or to seeking help. So, you know, that's a positive that I had. So I was quite happy to go and speak to a counselor and to get some help and to talk to my friends about it and to start to sort of redefine what I actually wanted in my life and what that sort of, you know, work life family balance was going to look like. And one thing that I certainly hadn't been considering was just looking after myself. And so one of the conclusions I got from seeing the counselor was to actually go bush and to spend some time by myself amongst the gum trees. So I did two big things. I started sitting in men's groups, and that was an extraordinary experience of sitting in circle with men and just hearing what was going on for other men, to realize so many blokes just have different versions of the same story, the same challenges going on, and the same hopes and dreams as well. So sitting in men's groups was huge. And actually, I got right into hiking and spending some time out in the bush and overnight hikes by myself and just getting a bit of time and space. And really, Good Blokes Co. was formed out of bringing those two things together. Like sitting in men's groups was transformative and, you know, life-changing for me. And Good Blokes Co. exists because I just want to make that happen for more other men. And whether that's men's yoga groups or fathers groups at the local primary school, or whether that's a men's group at the local soccer club, hockey club, rugby club, whatever it might be, all of the different, a podcast, like exactly this kind of situation. You know, we need men writing books around it. We just need more of that stuff happening. So yeah, I think the big thing for me was spending some time by myself, spending some time in groups of men sharing stories and just reconnecting to a bit of meaning and purpose and making sure I was going in a direction that really, you know, lit me up.
Beautiful. I mean, that word purpose, I mean, it's one of those, it's becoming more and more a swear word for me because it just has so many different connotations in it. It also, you know, men should have purpose, you know, it's like kind of, yeah, I get it. So like, what does that mean for you?
Yeah, it means doing the kind of work in my professional life that feels meaningful and that feels nice. That it has a good impact on other people. Nice. And in my personal life, it means being the kind of man that I want to be. It means making sure that I'm clear on what kind of human being do I want to be, or how do I want to make people around me feel, you know, with my kids, my wife, my friends, and in caring for myself. And trying to have some sort of system of accountability to stick to who I want to be, to keep myself aligned to my values. So that probably is what I mean by purpose.
That's beautiful, Mike. I love that so much. That's that warms my heart. That's a really nice way of looking at it. To move into the work that you actually do now, like your previous job, did you just kind of dump it, or did you take anything from that into group facilitation and working with men and of course now mothers and sons as well?
So I was an acupuncturist for 15 years, and you know, most people know that acupuncture is quite useful for back pain and these types of things, but I was really specialized on mental health, which is why it was so surprising when I ended up in the emergency department thinking I was having a heart attack. I've been teaching people to meditate for 10 years. And then I was like, what? So yeah, my kind of philosophy on well-being is really steeped in, you know, finding balance in yin and yang and the five seasons and these types of things. So I think that does still inform what I do now in terms of camps. I've just moved to, rather than helping people overcome a problem, trying to get proactive in building those connections prior to having a problem. So yeah, there was a period of about 5 years where I was doing both jobs at the same time, running an acupuncture clinic and doing camps and retreats on the weekend. And about 2 years ago, right around the time COVID hit, actually, I just had way too much on my plate and chose to pull the pin on my acupuncture clinic because my heart was really in a different place and chose to step into doing more sort of camps and retreats, men's leadership retreats, father-son camps, rites of passage camps, mother-son camps, and a few programs in schools as well, getting boys to talk about healthy masculinity and well-being. So for the last 2 years, I've worked in this field full-time. And when I stepped out, I was like, oh, I hope I can make a living out of this. But the demand has just totally blown me away. It's crazy how people, you know, want so much, so many people want a piece of it. So I'm really kind of run off my feet and trying to find that, you know, I found myself trying to find that balance again between looking after myself and doing that kind of meaningful work that I enjoy, you know.
Amazing. Like, I'm glad you're in that space where it's like, well, this is really working. And it's just, okay, remembering to find the balance again for yourself, right? Like, it's amazing. Tell me more, or tell us more about the experiences themselves, because you mentioned rites of passage, you've been working with doing father-son retreats. This is something that newer to Mal and I, like, as in we haven't had guests on talking about this before, and we were like, there's so much value in that, you know, like what happens there? And of course also the whole mother-son retreat, like, wow, what's that about? Like, I can imagine the value, and I've seen people share on your social media, like the impact that it's had on them, like the kids themselves, or the young men, maybe you should say, and the parents. Like, tell us more. Like, I'm sure there's people out there listening that are curious about this and as curious as we are. So why separate? You know, what does it look like? Rites of passage. Talk for an hour. I'm really excited.
Yeah. So it's interesting. Like, I came from this through men's work and then discovered rites of passage work. And I was just really interested in the idea of helping boys transition towards adulthood, to drop some of these childhood ways of being and step more fully into a strong, authentic, you know, strong sense of identity that can then, you know, drive their decision making and their life. And typically the structure of that, as I learned it, was in a father-son format. I have done camps for boys, you know, based in school. So, you know, me, a school teacher, and 15 boys walking through the bush talking about manhood and masculinity. And those camps are profoundly moving and just beautiful and very, very different to men's work. You know, I sit in a group of men and men just pour their hearts out. There's tears and vulnerability and stuff. Whereas working with 14, 15-year-old boys is a different sport. You know, they're not quite so willing to open up in front of their mates. So there's, you know, there's a lot of engaging them and getting them to buy into the process first. But when you do that, man, we talk about how boys don't want to talk about their feelings. It's absolute rubbish. When I create a space where boys trust me and they trust each other, which I think is the biggest challenge of this work, if I get them to trust each other and then, you know, the sun goes down, we light the fire, they will open up and talk until the cows come home. They are desperate for places to talk more. We just need to create more spaces where it feels safe for them. So giving boys a chance to explore, you know, what are my challenges? What are my struggles? What is the difference between a boy and a man? What is the difference between a child and an adult? And who do I want to be? And what does accountability look like? And what does integrity look like? And having all of those conversations with boys over a few days is just immensely rewarding. But most of what I do now is in that father-son and mother-son kind of a format. So I have a father-son camp, a rites of passage camp for sort of 15 to 18-year-old boys, which is primarily, over the course of a few days, getting a boy to stand up around the fire on the third night and say, this is what I believe healthy masculinity is. This is the kind of man I want to be. This is what I'm taking responsibility for. And this is how I want my dad to have my back and to support me. And that is a powerful moment, because when we can pass that information back on to his other family, his mum, his siblings, his other parents, uncles, aunties, grandparents, then we can shift from, you know, holding a boy up to our standards and saying, oh, you're not, that's not how we roll in this family, and you're not up to the school standards. We can shift from that towards, you're better than that. Who do you want to be here? You know, that's not how you said you wanted to treat your sister, or that's not how you said you wanted to be with your schoolwork, or that's not how you said you wanted to be at work. How do you want to be? And we then put the ball right back in his court, which makes it so much easier for boys to take responsibility. So at the heart of it, it's empowering young men, which they're ready for at the ages of 16, 17, empowering them to step up and take responsibility for, you know, I want to be this. And they all have a different answer to that question. Who do I want to be as a young man? They all have a beautiful, different, authentic, honest answer to that question. And then the challenge for us as men in their life is how do we step back and allow them to make mistakes, and then when they do, hold them to account to their own kind of version. And then, you know, there's the other benefits around that father-son bonding, and that, and it's just as powerful for the fathers as it is for the boys, right? It's a huge experience.
Yeah, that was that was the question that I was leaning towards here. Is I'm really hearing what's transitioning in the boys, and I'm curious what's transitioning in the men and the fathers as they're witnessing this. Like what's taking place inside them as an experience, do you think? And you know, how's that, what the impact as the fathers then go away? I'm really curious to know how that impacts them and their relationships going forward as well, and seeing that son transit, their son transition through this.
Yeah, well, the I guess one answer is that it's different for every man. But the other answer is that I think the common thing is that it's about letting go of that control, letting go of being the one who decides whether his behavior is okay or not, and allowing him to decide when he feels it's okay or not. But I think giving a young bloke a chance to stand up and say, this is what I'm taking responsibility for. I think a lot of dads are really, and mums are really desperate for that. Like they want their boys to step up. But we generally do it by sort of telling them to step up rather than sort of inviting them to have a good few days without their phones. You know, there's no alcohol, there's no mobile phones, there's no laptops, there's no notifications, there's no bing, there's none of that kind of stuff for 3 days. Get really present, think about who you want to be. And while the boys are out in the bush sitting under a tree considering what they're going to say when they come back around the fire, I'm sitting around with the men and saying, what do you need to let go of? What do you need to change? Because in a relationship of two people, he can't grow to be a man if you're still cutting the crust off his sandwiches for him and tying his shoelaces for him and giving him the answers and solving his problems and doing all of those things for him. We've got to let our boys fail. We've got to let them hurt. We've got to let them sit with their struggles and their pain and stand up and take responsibility for it, which is hard for a lot of men because we often as men, as fathers, haven't had the chance to really step up into that, you know, authentic expression of manhood ourselves. So part of it for men is us answering that question, well, who do I want to be? What kind of father do I want to be? What kind of man, what kind of husband, mate, coworker, uncle, you know, nephew, grandson, what kind of man do I want to be? And that's a huge part of it.
I mean, I'm just wondering, like, just that must be so powerful for the man, because how often does a man get to sit with these questions? And is he expecting that kind of thing when he comes to a retreat like that? You know, that there must be, I'm hoping the collaborative aspect is what opens men up and sharing and that kind of thing. Like, these are really important questions that we don't generally talk about in our day to day, right? Because of bing and all of that kind of stuff. But on the other hand, you've also got the, like, if I imagine myself as a 15, 16 year old sitting under a tree going, tonight you're going to stand up in front of, by the fire and say all of the stuff you just talked about, or just to share what kind of man I want to be or something like that, I'd be absolutely terrified. Right. So, I mean, does it get emotional? Like you mentioned, you have to sort of chip away at them and create that space of safety from the beginning, because they're probably like, fuck you, man, at the beginning. Right. So like, how God's earth do you kind of get them from A to B like that? Because that sounds like art.
Look, I think it is an art, the facilitation in that. And I think the key to it is curiosity. Because if I come saying, you know, a real man is this, or healthy masculinity these days is this, and I already have the answers, well, I'm not really accepting their answer of who they want to be. So if I start with a real curiosity, and if I start by seeing the best in boys, which is then going back to that whole idea we talked about as good blokes at the start, if we start by assuming that, you know, being a man is possibly quite potentially a really good thing, then I'm starting to see the best in that guy as soon as he walks in the door. I'm starting to be curious about who the heck he is. And, you know, you might notice if you scroll back 5 or 10 minutes, you know, it's day three. It's the end of day three. I'm asking them to stand by the fire. So they've had time to unpack this stuff. And, you know, I really encourage the men to lead that process of vulnerability around the fire. And that's, you know, that's part of the job of my team. Like, we'll lead into it. You know, we'll sit around the fire and we'll talk about what's hard. And if I'm not willing to get really vulnerable and potentially emotional and potentially teary and talking about what's hard in my life, then how on earth would I expect boys to do the same? So we lead with vulnerability and we're really open with curiosity and we invite them. It's not compulsory for any of these boys to stand around the fire and tell me who he wants to be. But gee whiz, it's a heck of an opportunity. And that's what we say to these boys is like, you want independence? You want respect from your parents? Well, here's a chance. And, you know, how many 16, 17-year-olds don't want, you know, more free reign and more, you know, independence and freedom and respect and rights? Well, if you want the rights, standing up by the fire and taking responsibility is a damn fine place for you to start. So that real non-judgmental sort of atmosphere and that modeling of that vulnerability, by the end of day three, they're ready to stand up and say, you know what? This is what I think is important. And we get around them and we support whatever their version of that is.
That's incredible. The piece that really jumped out at me was when you talked about, like, maybe it's okay to be a bloke. Maybe being a bloke is a good thing. And, you know, I don't want to get caught up into sort of a few societal narratives that are going on. I kind of think that's probably really, really unhelpful, but it's refreshing to you here, kind of to hear you frame the opposite and just lead in with that kind of thing, you know, like, and at that younger age, I think it's probably a very healthy and important thing to hear. And then you modeling, like you said, honesty, vulnerability, showing them the way in and giving them the opportunity to actually do that themselves, because like you said, they're ready, willing, and able, right? They just need, like, kind of, dare I say it, like a role modeling, right, in some way.
Yeah, and it's interesting. So I work with a lot of young blokes, and a lot of them are really sick of being told that boys and men are the problem, right? And this is this political thing which I'm really cautious to get into.
Right.
I actually think it's super important for boys to know that we as men need to get better at respecting women. But let's talk more about what the solution is. I feel like we're talking about disrespect a lot, but we're not talking about respect and kindness and support and all of that kind of stuff. And men are capable of all of that. We need more of that. We need to hear women's stories. We absolutely need to hear more of women's stories of when they didn't feel respected, they didn't feel equal, they didn't feel safe, they didn't feel celebrated. And then we need to help young blokes and men of all ages to tap into, right, well, how do I lift women up? How do I celebrate women? How do I support women? And when we start from that, you know, perspective, I think that's an easier way in. It's easy for boys to assume, oh, we're talking about masculinity, here's me being the bad guy again. It's like, well, let's take responsibility for that. There's a lot of people who don't feel supported and celebrated by men. A lot of people of all genders that don't feel safe and supported by men. Let's be part of it. Move on. Let's be part of the solution. What does kindness look like for you? What does compassion look like for you? What does empathy look like for you? What does accountability and responsibility look like for you? And when you frame it up, like when I ask boys in workshops or on camps, what kind of human do you want to be? What's the best character traits you aspire to? They don't talk about being an alpha, big dog, macho boss. They talk about being honest, loyal, trustworthy, kind, hardworking, strong, dependable, all of the stuff we would expect them to be. They want to be good human beings. And when we start with that, we're giving them a chance to get clear on who they want to be and what the best version of their self might look like.
I'm listening to this and I'm feeling an explosion of in my heart, really, of just, you know, hearing the way that you're talking about what kids are saying is like, it's a message. Like, you know, I'm just reflecting, you know, I've got a 6-year-old daughter, but I haven't heard this kind of conversation go on about boys and what, you know, teenagers and young men and the process and what they want. And I'm realizing as we're talking, you know, the mystery of what is actually taking place inside our young men and the assumptions that are being made around a lot of that, but also just how absolutely beautiful it is to hear these words come out. And I mean, kindness, for example, is just such a beautiful word it can be perceived potentially as being soft, but that's exactly the point. It is a soft word. It's so beautiful. And that is part of this embracing. And I've been listening and watching you speak, and just the energy of excitement and joy that you're exuding as you're talking about this just speaks to how powerful the work you're doing. But also how, you know, I'm thinking about myself, just how much, it's not that it's misunderstood, but it's how it's, there's just a lack of knowing, a lack of understanding really about this whole process. So to hear what you're talking about, these rites of passage, I'm feeling it's got me excited hearing you talk about all the stuff, which you know, I'm feeling really chuffed about it. So partly I'm just reflecting back and also saying thank you and having this insight about this lack of, you know, this real lack of understanding that I've actually had. And I believe probably a lot of society has had up until this juncture.
Yeah, I think one of the things you talk about kindness being, you know, a bit of a soft word, and I think there's certainly a lot of men out there who feel like kindness and compassion aren't for them, you know, they're for people who like the smell of lavender and have flowers on their walls, and it's like, hang on a sec. But here's the thing: if you sit down with a group of men and say, "Tell me a story about when you were really kind," everyone's got a story of that. Everyone has a story of that. Yeah. Let's harness that as men. We're not, you know, I talk about how difficult it is to talk about our challenges and our struggles and to be vulnerable, but how often are men having conversations about beauty, about love, and about care and about these types of things? And I think that is how we unlock the best of young blokes to be able to actually. I talk a lot about blokes who give a shit. I think at the core of ourselves, we deeply care about other people, but I think there's a lot of young blokes who are being convinced to be a tough guy, and then actually caring about others is not manly. And that is not a recipe for a young bloke being able to look after himself or to have great relationships with men or women or any people of any gender. So, yeah, we've got to have more conversations about this.
Yeah, just to jump or piggyback on what Mal had said, like, you know, my neck is sore from nodding along constantly from the last God knows how long we've been talking about so far. You know, it's just like full agreement, and I'm really, really enjoying hearing you speak as well. The angle I'm interested in around mothers and sons to dive into, just before we get there, like, if you were able to sort of boil it down, what would be kind of the most important things or ideas that you'd love to get across to fathers right now listening, or potentially fathers to be? I mean, is there anything that we haven't covered so far? Is there a couple of ground rules or ideas that you're like, hey, look, here's how we want to reframe this? Things that fathers want to be aware of bringing sons or daughters or indeed non-gender specific babies into this world? You know, like, what would you have to say to them?
Well, I think the key is just to be conscious of how our masculinity has shaped us as men. And as men, you know, growing and being socialized as men, where, you know, we're convinced that we're supposed to do things by ourselves, and that we're, you know, not supposed to talk about our feelings, and we're not supposed to talk for help. You're not supposed to ask for help. We're supposed to be the tough guy and all of that kind of stuff. And I just think it's worth reconsidering that. Which of those bits are working for me and which of those bits are not working for me? And having conversations with other men, other dads, like, what are the comments? What are you finding hard about fatherhood? What do you want to reimagine, and what kind of dad do you want to be? So have more conversations and take the time to reflect and think and journal and talk about what kind of father you want to be. And then listen to your kids. You know, as they grow and they start to be able to talk and they start to find their own version of who they want to be and they start to become teenagers and the whole way up, you know, start to really get on the same page by sharing your own stories and listening to where they are at, I think is the biggest piece.
Beautiful. Thank you for that, man. Like, as I mentioned earlier, I'd love to ask you about this mother-son retreat as well. That's a very different flavor, right? So,
yeah.
You know, how did that come about, that idea? And do you have like a female facilitator doing it with you? Or is it just you kind of running that? Like, share a bit about what that looks like what kind of different flavors that has.
Yeah, so it's interesting. Like, it came about because all of the mums on my social media feed asked me for it. So it wasn't my intention to get into that line of work, but I just constantly am bombarded by mothers of boys saying, I want to have this experience with my son. And so then the obvious question is, like you said, oh, do I get a woman to come in and run the boys process, or is it? But what they wanted is they wanted to know more about boyhood and about manhood, about masculinity. I'm like, oh, well, that's my thing. I'll run that. So the first one I did, I'm like, I'm going to run it with my co-facilitators and our team of three blokes, and we'll see if that works. And at the end, I said, do you think I should get a female facilitator in there next time? And they all said pretty much universally, this is what we're looking for. Do it like this. So it's a chance for mums to really, you know, walk in the world of boys for a few days. And we play all the sort of similar games to what we play on these father-son camps and similar physical challenges. The topic conversations around the fire are obviously different, but it's a chance for boys to see their mums as a human being with her own challenges and struggles and her own hopes and dreams. It's a chance for boys to consider their physical relationships with mums. We do like team building challenges and games where they're against the mums, where they're on the same team as the mums, where they're with a mum who's not their mum, where they're paired up with their mum, also all the different versions. And they're actually practicing as physical, living, breathing, embodied people. How do I be on the same team as a physical female human being? How do I be on the opposite team? How do I respect her strength and not cross her boundaries? And actually having a physical chance to practice having physical relationships is huge. And then we gather around the fire and we laugh, like, because a lot of boys see their mums and their dads as the person who cooks the dinner and drops me at school and pays the bills. But, oh, I can have a laugh with them as well. So that's huge. But then we gather around the fire and I ask the mums to share, like, what was it like being a teenage girl? What's challenging about being a woman? And of course,
wow. Nice.
They open up and share these amazing stories. And the boys are just jaws dropping to the floor and going, oh, I didn't realize, because boys are not consuming feminist literature. Boys at 14 are not listening to feminist podcasts. They don't hear the stories of women and girls. And this is an opportunity for them to hear what it is like. If we want boys to grow up to be respectful towards women and have great relationships with female co-workers and great intimate relationships with women or whatever sexuality they have, we need them. They need to know what women are all about. We need to hear their stories. And then second night, we talk about what's a good bloke? What we hear from the mums, when were you celebrated by a man? When were you valued by a man? When were you really treated equal by a man? And these are these beautiful stories of the best of the men in their life. And it gives the boys something to go home with. Like, I want to be that kind of guy who makes women feel amazing in my world. So it's pretty amazing experience. And, you know, like I said, I didn't intend to get into mother son camps, but all of a sudden it's one of the highlights of the year. It's a pretty special experience.
Yeah. I can imagine that could be a worldwide phenomenon of a program, just hearing you speak about it. And I'm curious. I mean, in some ways you kind of answered it, that piece around the way that it opened the eyes of the young men in terms of kind of getting to see women in a way that probably they hadn't seen before, particularly their mums. But I mean, have you followed up and to see what kind of impact that has down the track, you know, I mean, from a mother-son relationship, but also like, how does that impact the boys as they go on in their life relating to women? I mean, I don't know how long you've been doing it, but have you got a sense already of the impact that might have?
Yeah, only a couple of years that mother-son camp, and I do get lots of continuing feedback from mums, but I haven't actually scratched the surface to see how the boys are going with that and how that has changed for them. So that's, I'm going to take that home as homework. I'm actually going to head out and ask some of the boys what their experiences are. But mums have certainly said to me, you know, they feel like it's strengthened their relationship. They feel more confident that he knows how to treat girls and young women better. Just that he knows himself better. Because part of all of my camps is helping boys to know, like, who do you want to be? Like, let's drop this idea of having to be a tough guy or having to be compassionate or whatever, and just be who you want to be. Like, what's your version? What flavor do you bring to our community? So there's that part of it as well. But don't know. I might have to now go back and ask some of the boys what they learned, how it's changed.
Excellent. Yeah. I'd love to know myself, because, you know, we're on this podcast, we've had a number of different conversations around this male female kind of dynamic and how it plays itself out, and just and interviewed women and got a real sense of, you know, what their experience is like. So this is another little thing for us too, to get just to get a sense really of, you know, because there's always been this curiosity, how can we develop and grow and improve and heal the relationships between men and women and men and non-gendered people, you know. So getting this kind of information would just be absolutely gold.
Huge. Short answer to that question, how do we heal those relationships? I think the first thing we've got to do is we've got to get on the same page and we've got to hear each other's stories. We've got to create spaces where men are really, really ready to listen to women. And conversely, women are hearing what's it like being a man in the world. And I think that is an incredible first step. If we can get on the same page, then we have some at least chance of, you know, holding each other to account to what we want to create, you know.
I love this, Mike. I'm really curious to ask you about the rites of passage and to dive into that a little bit. You know, before we jumped on live, we talked about Tyson Yunkapura and this beautiful book, Sand Talk, which is about you know, how we've lost this kind of the native wisdom, you know, of say like Aboriginal tribes. And I know that you mentioned you work with, you know, some, maybe I'm getting the name wrong, the appropriate terminology, but, you know, sort of native tribes, Aboriginals, and you bring that in, like, what does rites of passage look like for men or mothers and fathers? And how does that, how have you been inspired by or used the wisdom of elders in Australia?
Yeah, I've done small amounts of work with some local Indigenous Aboriginal folks, and I'm not full bottle on how things are done in their culture because I'm not privy to that sort of information. But I do know that rites of passage have existed throughout human history across the whole world, and you know, in different forms, like a wedding, a marriage is a rite of passage, a funeral's a rite of passage. But in most communities throughout history, there's been a boy to man rite of passage. There's also a lot of fat of girl to woman rite of passage, and pregnancy and birth can sometimes be a big part of that as well. But definitely, my knowledge is around boy to man sort of rites of passage work. And you know, there's an African proverb that says that if we don't initiate our boys into manhood, they will burn down the village just to feel the heat. And it's an interesting saying, isn't it? And most people have a visceral reaction when they hear that, because we know what burning down the village is. And the third part of that is just to feel the heat. Like, we're trying to feel alive. We're trying to test boundaries. We're trying to feel sort of capable and powerful as human beings. And if we don't, you know, help our young men to stand by the fire and say, life is important. I'm at the age of my life where I can be making decisions that affect me and other people long-term, you know, decisions, driving a car, drugs and alcohol, sex and relationships. I'm making big decisions in my life. I need to know who the heck I am. I need to be behind the steering wheel myself, you know? And if we don't give boys a chance to do that as they become young men, they'll go out and find their own rites of passage, whether that's through partying or sexual conquest or, risky behavior or any of those things. So a lot of societies around the world have seen it as an absolutely essential part of shifting boys from this me, it's all about me, look at me, mummy, to I know what I'm capable of, I know what I have to offer, and this is what I want to be for the community. You know, it's like a turning out. If we don't do that, we end up with, you know, a society full of, you know, baby men who haven't grown up. And, you know, you just have to look in governments around the world and corporations. Yeah.
I was just thinking the same thing. You could probably say the what's burning in the Ukraine right now. You could argue that that's exactly an example of that situation playing itself out.
Yep.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
So I have a question following on from that. Sorry, Mal. Sorry, just before you go, potentially go, change go, tack. Yeah. Like, with the men's work that's out there, like I have this kind of thought that some of it is still sort of playing with that me stuff, you know, like I don't want to point fingers and say right or wrong, but what's your sense of men's work when you look out there? What inspires you about it? And what do you potentially think is like, well, we're not actually doing that rite of passage. We're not actually stepping into purpose or service, you know, like what's your sense of that? Because I won't claim to kind of, you know, be fully beyond that me stuff, you know, and I have ideas that, having a kid is like a rite of passage that would really, really help that, for example, you know, but like, I don't think that there are enough healthy rites of passage for men. And I'm wondering what your feeling is to the men's work that you kind of see out there. Is it fulfilling that need?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. And, you know, I won't comment on anyone else's sort of men's work weekends or retreats without having been on them. But I do certainly see a bit of, you know, our Western culture is very individualistic. And when I see men's work, which is about claiming my power, you know, I think that's half of the equation. You know, going back to my time as a Chinese medicine practitioner, like I want strength and vulnerability. I want to know who I am and I want to know how to care for others. And
it's almost so like this, Mike.
Yeah, there's two sides of the equation. And if your men's work is all about resilience and strength and power and identity, well, you're only halfway there and you're only really serving yourself. I think it needs to be about resilience and strength and power and identity and care and compassion and love and kindness and service and generosity. So, you know, and authenticity as well. I think there's some men's work which is a little bit, you know, essentialist, which men are like this.
Right.
And I think it's worth acknowledging that as men, there's similarities, but also men can be whoever they want to be. Like if you're into football and beer, great. If you're into dancing and tie-dye, also great. If you're into, you know, fishing and interpretive dance, also great. You know,
whatever that combination.
Yeah, I can just see it right now. Guy with that rod twirling around.
Come on, Jeff. We've got the catch for the day. Let's do some interpretive dance. Like, sure, mate. Let's go.
Yeah. So it's got to be about authenticity as much as it is about, you know, acknowledging what is essentially male, and it's got to be as much about kindness and caringness and service as much as it is about strength of our own identity.
Sir, I agree the fuck out of you, and I love what you're saying so much. You're speaking my truth, brother, as we would say in a circle. Fucking ho, really. Like, thank you, Mal. You wanted to ask something before I rudely.
No, I'm all good. It was that last little piece, kind of spoke everything that needed to be said, in my opinion. It was beautiful words and beautiful. It landed with a deep thud, that one.
Because it lands with a thud because we know that it's true, right? You exactly. Know in your heart that just being strong in who you are, but without sharing it with anyone with kindness, that's not going to get you anywhere. And just giving yourself away with kindness and empathy and not being strong in who you are, you know, that's not a sustainable plan either. You know, we know this stuff. We know that we need a rite of passage. We know that we need to gather as humans and talk about important stuff. We know that we need to balance self-care and care for others. And we just, I think, need reminders sometimes, you know.
And leaders, sir. And dare I say, you're doing it well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, because in this instance, we've been talking about rites of passage as it relates to teenage boys. But I mean, you know, what's occurring to me as we're talking is that there's a number of different stages in men's life too, either as well, isn't it? And I think the sense that I'm getting is, you know, how great it would be to begin to honor some of the transitions, particularly as we get older in life too. You know, I'm thinking myself, I'm there heading towards 50 this year, and you know, there's a sense of kind of, you know, I felt myself at the beginning, I really want to honor this age, and there is a sense of a transition that I feel that I almost want to make in this journey. And as I become you know, I'm still considering myself young, but there's a sense of this idea of transitioning as I get a little bit older as well. And I'm just curious, have you done any work in or explored these rites of passages as they relate to different age groups in the male journey?
Yeah, it's a really, really, really good question. And I love it. And, you know, at the age of 45 myself, feeling really competent in my field and trying to, you know, pass the wisdom off and allow other people to take it on. Like you mentioned, this mother-son camp could be a global phenomenon. If anyone wants to run these in other parts of the world, I'll help to help you to train you how to do it and set it up. You know, I want to give away that knowledge. And that to me is my next step towards being, I guess, an elder is the word in our community. And where are the, you know, the healthy expressions of male eldership, elderhood, whatever you want to call it, in the world? I think it's a bit of an untapped thing. And if we're going to heal this whole masculinity picture, I think we've got to look after the boys. I think we've got to look after, you know, men in the middle who are working and balancing work and life and family. And I think we need elders, conscious, aware, switched on elders who are, you know, willing to take responsibility for caring for future generations. And I think there's a certain amount of healthy elderhood for me there's a certain amount of humility in that, in terms of stepping back and letting others take over. You know, I got into rubbishing politicians earlier, and it's easy to point at people like Donald Trump, but like Joe Biden, the American president, it's late 70s, isn't he? It's like, isn't it time for you guys to step back and let some younger people take on those challenges of leadership? I think that takes a certain level of humility. And as men, I don't think that's something we're socialized towards. I don't think humility is
totally
as a strength.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And just hearing you speak, I mean, I think in some ways this discussion of the transition into eldership is less recognized and less understood perhaps even than this piece around you know, the transition from boys to men. I mean, it's the great, you know, how many men do you know have gracefully transitioned into eldership? I mean, you know, we have I guess in a Western culture, there's a retirement, right? Here's your watch and fuck off. But and then go and start gardening I mean, again, it just has me. I'm sitting in a, you know, the word curious. I just love that word curious, and I'm sitting in curiosity of what it would look like to begin to explore that, this process of how we can really enrich and empower that transition. I mean, it's a discussion for another time and another podcast, perhaps, and a whole different journey. But you know, that's actually something that has, out of this conversation, has really begun to have me be curious.
Yeah, I think the conversation is a starting point. I just think we need to have more conversations around what is healthy, what is a healthy elder, and what is that, and how do we support each other to grow towards that as we hit those stages of life, you know? Yeah, I don't have the answers. I've got plenty of questions though.
This is a great theme though, Mike. And do you not find that, I'll start with what I think and then you can sort of let me know if you agree or not, but I think there are plenty of men out there that would love to have that role of elder, but we're just, you know, that's not kind of the done thing now. Like politics is a different beast, but in everyday life, you know, Eastern cultures that I've been to and hung around, like they all live together, and the older you get, the more you tend to be revered and respected. And you know, we don't have that in Western culture as much, I would argue, if at all. And I think that there are plenty of men that would love to have that sense of, yeah, come to me and I'd love to be able to share. And I sense that men in particular, but will sort of head off and lose that sense of purpose after retirement if they don't have, you know, that role of elder, because it's kind of, I'm not going to claim it's like in our DNA, but it's been there for a long time. You know, it makes sense that the longer you've been around, the more value you have to offer. You survived, right? And the same would apply to women as well. Like, why aren't we kind of venerating and listening to? So my sense is that if we could reframe this conversation and start to do it now, somehow, then give the elders that currently are there, that still have their faculties, right, that kind of role, then we could start to kind of, you know, hear their wisdom already, you know, and give them a sense of purpose. You know, like, do you know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah.
So, like, again, how?
100% agree. And look, I don't know if I've got any answers in terms of how, but we certainly live in a culture that doesn't, you know, venerate, respect elders. And we worship youth. It's, you know, how much are we spending on plastic surgery as a society to pretend that we look younger? Yeah, I just think, like, when you look in individual family units, there's often that incredible bond between grandparents and grandkids, but it stops there. And I think in most traditional societies, you would have dozens of uncles and aunties and dozens of grandparents of you know, and their extended relatives, and you would be part of a wider community. But it's kind of seen as a weird thing for old people to want to go and volunteer in schools and to hang out. I think elderly people, or even just retired, not even elderly, like just people in their 60s, volunteering their time to hang out at schools and to guide young people, that's an incredibly positive energy that those people can bring. But like I said before, they're still trying to be, they're 77 years old and you're still trying to be presidents. Like, you've actually got to take a step back and have that level of humility. What it's like, you're either CEO or you're retired and you're off the team and you're just sitting at home watching Netflix all day long. And so there's not,
right,
there's not those cultural structures for how, you know, older people post-retirement can stay involved in our community. And, you know, there's ways that they can connect with each other, which is great, but how do they connect with everyone else? How do they share their wisdom, particularly with young people? I think there's a massive gap there of young people connecting with older people. And there's that natural bond while the people in the you know, men and women in their 40s and 50s are busy working 70 hours a week.
Right. I mean, I know that in some countries, and it's happening less and less, but then you'd have this national service, you know, you go into the military. And if you didn't want to do that as a young man or woman, then you would go and take care of people in homes and things like that. There's yeah, a nicer word for it, I'm sure. And in England, we didn't have the national service, but I did have to do, like, go for a week to an elderly home. And it was a very strange experience. You know, it's just some old lady that was kind of kept giving me a pound to buy some sweets, but she kept forgetting that she was, you know, and I was like, well, I could cash in here. But luckily I've been brought up well enough to just, you know, not do that. But it was just like, kind of like, what am I doing with this frail old human? And she's in a wheelchair and I'm rolling her down the street and I'm like, how do I get her up? And it was like, there was no genuine interaction. And it was, you know, a missed opportunity, let's say, you know, so that this, that's not going to do it. Like, as you said, how can we keep these people involved in community, those that obviously choose to, but if somehow we can sort of shape the idea that they belong and that's wisdom to be sought after, then they're going to want to kind of share that, right? Isn't that sense of belonging and that sense of service that I think is natural in all of us, that we all want to kind of share and be relevant and be part of something? So yeah, like, more questions than answers for sure, but that seems to me like a much a cooler world to live in, I would argue.
Yeah, yeah. If there's meaningful ways of, rather than just a week, like, meaningful ways of ongoing relationships between older and younger people in communities, I think everyone wins from that, you know?
Totally, yeah. Being forced to sit with Gran is one thing. especially if she's not really there anymore, versus like having had like an ongoing, that's beautiful, an ongoing relationship where there's an old person, what do I know about her? Or there's this young kid and, oh, you're all different these days. Curiosity, that word you put in earlier, like, what's different? Because back in my day, it was like this. And there's so much value to these kind of ongoing relationships. That's a nice way of framing it.
Totally.
There's a big XL for me. Mal, you got anything to add? I mean, like...
This is a conversation has been incredibly rich. And, you know, I feel as if you've really given such a great flavor to, what's the word I'm looking for? I mean, the way that you've kind of rolled us through what you do here, Mike, has been really special. And I think the overriding emotion I'm feeling is gratitude to you for the work you do, and also admiration. I love the way that you speak about this, and it's been a really amazing conversation to have. Thank you very much.
Thanks, man. And I do the work I do because I love doing it. And like I said earlier, like the demand for this kind of work is massive. So if there's people out there who want to be doing more programs for the well-being of men so that we can have great relationships with other people of all genders, like I think the world is so desperately in need of that kind of stuff. So if you're wondering whether to get something like that happening, I just think more people should be diving into that, you know.
Fully agreed, sir. Like, is there anything on your side that we haven't raised, or is any final thoughts, anything you're itching to kind of share with us? And that could be like a full-on sales pitch for something that you're doing specifically, or perhaps a heartwarming message for someone. Like, the floor is yours, sir.
Yeah, no, nothing huge for me. If people want to know more about what I do, they're welcome to hit me up on the socials, Good Blokes Co, or head to the website and see what we do. But if you're interested in men's retreats or father-son stuff or mother-son stuff or rites of passage, I love chatting about this sort of stuff. It's my favorite thing to talk about. So if you've got questions, just jump on the internet and hit me up.
Beautiful. Mate, beautiful. Heartfelt thanks from myself. Mal's already said thanks as well. It's an honor, sir. Like, thank you very, very much. I imagine we may well invite you back on if you'd be interested. There's a few other areas to really dive into as well. So we would look forward to that.
Yeah, it's been an absolute pleasure. Great to chat with you guys. And let's do this again, hey?
All right, brother man.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Mike.
And thanks to everyone out there for listening. And hopefully see you next week for another episode.
From this week's podcast, if there's been anything that's inspired you, challenged you, or simply left you wanting more, then please reach out to Richie and Mal via their Facebook page, Man Reimagined. Just like you, we're trying to get a handle on all these issues and topics. So the more we're able to share and talk about them, I think the better off we're all going to be. Until next time, catch you later.